Travolting presents Bobbin for Robin. Hosted by Jeff Sweeney and Stuart Elmore. Covering the survivors. Enjoy the episode.
It's funny we both had that same idea. That was not planned. We just both started doing that. Now he's got queued up. Yes.
Welcome, folks.
Welcome back
to Bobbin for Robin.
Thank you for listening to the episode on GARP ADM last week.
GARP ADM. Welcome back to the 1983 American comedy film directed by Michael Ritchie, The Survivors.
Yes.
Starring Walter Matthau.
Robin Williams.
Supporting roles with Jerry Reed.
Yeah. Woo!
Woo! So, the tagline, once they declare war on each other, watch out. You could die laughing.
Okay. My first complaint. This movie's not about them fighting each other.
No, it's not.
It's about them becoming friends.
Yes.
What are we doing?
Because then, like, why once you have to put Jerry Reed on the poster.
Once they declare war on each other, watch out. They don't declare war on each other. There's, like, a little conflict between them at the end. That's it. This poster and this pitch is promising, like, it's Williams versus Matthau and this comedy for the ages.
Yeah.
No, it's not. It's not them. They're working together for the most part. They team up.
Yeah. So, thank you, everybody, for listening again last week for the world according to GARP. I have a little bit of context.
Yeah.
Should I just hop right in?
Yeah, let's talk about the Robin context of it all. I got something to say about the tone of this movie and why I think it doesn't work.
Oh, interesting. Okay, good. So this is taking place after Mork and Mindy's cancellation.
Yes.
So Robin at this point is split between two little career paths that he's battling. He's almost, I don't want to say hedging his bets, because one is more lucrative and successful than the other, and that is his stand-up comedy. Right now, Robin has just released, if not already released, his record, An Evening with Robin Williams, the HBO stand-up special, which I'm pretty sure wins a Grammy, if I'm not mistaken.
I would believe it.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, An Evening with Robin Williams, 1983. I think that wins a Grammy. One of his special stand-up specials in the 80s wins a Grammy, I know for sure. And so, he's getting a lot of good, like, press with his comedy records and his tour. He's going on a lot of these short little tours all over the country. Still doing stand-up at the Laugh Factory, the Improv, Comedy Store on LA. And then on the side, it's like he wants to be a movie star. And his managers are trying to make him a movie star. And with Popeye being more of like the, okay, Robin is a cartoon character actor. And while we spoke on it already that Popeye did make some money, ultimately it's kind of viewed as like not a success.
Mm-hmm.
And people look at that movie Popeye as, oh, look at Mork acting as Popeye.
Yes.
Well, now there's no more Mork.
There's no more Mork.
So now you have to do
Rip Mork.
You have to really establish the Robin of it all. So last week we talked about The World According to GARP, which is his first like serious tone movie. I didn't mention this last week, but that actually was supposed, that role is supposed to go to Christopher Reeves, funny enough, that then ends up going to Robin.
Yeah.
But that movie, I won't say colossal failure, but it's definitely a flop. And it's especially a flop for Robin. in the sense that, like, the reviews coming out of that movie is like Glenn Close, phenomenal. John Lithgow, really great. Mary Beth Hurt, amazing. What's Robin doing in this movie? It's like, what's the comedy goofy star doing in this heartfelt drama? It doesn't seem correct.
Yeah.
And so he kind of gets like scolded in that sort of vein. And this is an immediate reaction to that.
Yes.
Because the survivors, and I have a quote here that Robin says. He says, first of all, after GARP, I wanted to do a far out comedy, and the survivor certainly qualifies. Secondly, I like the basic premise. If we stick together, we'll all work out, sort of like yin, yang, and yang. You've got me. Who, I guess, specializes in frenetic and bizarre energy. You got Walter Matthau, who's very grounded and subtle. And then you've got Jerry Reed, whose character is like a cross between Mr. Rogers and Jack Nicholson. He's a lovable villain.
So, I don't know about that.
Right. Which, interesting enough, like a lot of these casting, like including Robin, including Walter Matthau, are recasting from their original cast, one of which was Jack Nicholson.
Yes.
Jack Nicholson was supposed to be in this movie. We've already...
He's been on the show
before. He's been on the show before.
Former roommate of mine.
This movie is directed by Michael Ritchie, who people have known him for...
So I want to talk about Michael Ritchie real quick.
Okay, so real quick, I'm just going to tie up the Robin bit a bit.
Tie up the Robin because I want to get back to
it. I'll tie up the Robin bit. So then he does the survivors, and like I said, it's the most like backwards, reverse backstep he could take from doing a heartfelt drama like The World According to GARP. He's trying to do like the most slapsticky, comedic, improv-y. As we said last week on GARP, he was not allowed to improv hardly at all on The World According to GARP. And as we're going to talk about with this movie, he's doing a lot in this movie. He's doing a lot.
Because the thing about this movie is that, like, we've talked a lot about movies like this. Trollta did a lot of movies like this in the 80s. Fraser was in them in the 90s. It's like kind of those like mid-tier comedies that just kind of exist to like turn out. They're not going to become big successes and whatnot. That's what this becomes. But I do think like Robin is smart to pick this movie based on like what its pitch is. The problem is that it just doesn't deliver on it.
Yeah.
Because Michael Ritchie, we've talked about him on the show before. He did The Scout.
Oh, with Brendan. I missed that.
But
shit.
He's like a pretty successful comedy director at this point. Like he had done The Candidate with Robert Redford. He did Bad News Bears. Right after this, he does Fletch and The Golden Child, with Chevy and Eddie Murphy. He does Fletch Lives, tragically. But like, he's a pretty dependable name in terms of comedy. There's a few winners in there, The Candidate especially. Bad News Bears, people still love with Matthau. And this is a reunion between him and Matthau.
Yeah.
But even more so than that, this movie is, you know, we talked a little bit, but one of Robin's big influences is Nichols and May, Mike Nichols and Elaine May.
And I have to point it out because it's a huge name, Jonathan Winters.
Yeah.
Jonathan Winters is a huge one too, but continue Nichols and
May. But Nichols and May, who were a comedy troupe, and then they both become directors of film. Yeah. And Mike Nichols goes on to become one of the most, I would say, acclaimed directors of his era. The Graduate. We're going to talk about him with The Birdcage. There's a million and a half other movies that I'm just not going to list because there's so many of them. Elaine May, similar energy. She goes a little more bitingly comic with her work because it's New Leaf, then Heartbreak Kid, then Mikey and Nikki, and then Ishtar, which colossal flop and ends her career. But sexism is what really ended her career. Much less to do with Ishtar's flopping, even though it was a colossal flop. But this movie has a very Elaine May premise to it. Mm-hmm. This would slide in on a basic level with like New Leaf and Heartbreak Kid. Yeah. Especially because Matthau is the lead in New Leaf. A New Leaf is a movie about Walter Matthau is a really rich guy who's just depressed. And then he's going to lose all of his money if he doesn't get married in a week.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just him like kind of sulking around being like, oh, I'm just so sad. I'm going to have to do things now. I don't just have all this money from my uncle.
Yeah.
And he like essentially seduces. Elaine May plays the co-lead in the movie. He's like kind of just a ditzy woman who he finds like at a social event.
Yeah.
And it's really funny. And Elaine May is a master of comedy in it. And this movie has a very similar start where it's like Robin Williams gets fired by a parrot and Mathal is losing his gas station. And the two of them are both just like sad sacks in New York City in the early 80s.
Yeah.
And that feels like the beginning of a good, you know, Nichols May style premise. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that's what Robin latches onto, especially being paired with Mathal in the movie.
Yeah.
Who comes from that world.
Yeah.
And
on paper, it sounds like a great pairing.
On paper, it seems like a good idea, especially this, you know, Michael Ritchie is not like, you know, batting 100, but Bad News Bears candidate. He's had successes. He's like a proven name in comedy.
I should clarify, I said Robin did not win a Grammy for An Evening with Robin Williams. He won a Grammy for Reality, What a Concept, 1979, and A Night at the Met, 1986. Yeah. Sorry.
And then I think the problem is that this movie just, it simply doesn't work.
It's
kind of hard. It's like,
you're telling me, buddy.
It's kind of hard to diagnose the problem with this movie besides just that it doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
Because like, it's not the actor's fault. I think they're both doing they're both doing funny stuff. The movie just isn't funny around them. Mm-hmm. So their bits just don't really land that well.
Yeah.
I like something about Robin in this movie that I want to say is like, I kept thinking that my TV had accidentally gone to 1.25 speed.
Yes.
Because he is talking so fast in this movie. World According to Garp is a movie where he was forced to stay on book.
Yeah.
This is a movie where he's clearly being allowed to cut free.
Yeah.
Because he's just like, pew, 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 and it becomes clear that Richie doesn't really know how to work with his like live wire comedy.
Yeah.
Because the movie doesn't match his rhythm.
Well, into
Robin is Robin's operating like if you had actually put the music in a movie at 1.25 speed, but left the rest of the movie running at normal speed.
Yeah.
It doesn't match his rhythm at all.
It doesn't match the rhythm. And this goes to a consistent thing that I brought up on World According to Garp. And this is a main through line for this first era of Robin that we're going to be talking about, the comedian, which is like, directors in the early Robin time, it's like, and he works with some pretty good directors in this early period.
He does.
Like, I mean, Robert Altman and Popeye. I mean, yes. Come on, dude. So it's not that he's not given a fair shot per se, but even some of these really skilled directors, notable directors, directors who've worked with a bunch of different talent and comedians, they see Robin and they're like, what the fuck do I do with this guy? They're like, I don't know where to place him. I don't know how to talk to him. I don't know, I don't know what energy the room needs to be vibrating at for this guy. And we talked about this with John Travolta was a big one.
Because he's a new style of comedy. You can't just slot him in to your traditional rhythms.
And he's also just a new style of like, is it weird if I just say creativity?
Yeah.
And I say that in the sense of like, you talk about Robin at 1.25 speed. It's because Robin vibrates at 1.5 speed.
Yeah.
He slows it down for people to hear him correctly. Mm-hmm. And so, I think it's no accident. I think that like World According to Garp, it's like, it doesn't work very well because Robin is just like constrained way too much.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, you can see him on screen feel rigid and stiff. This, he's like, blah, 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 blah. He's like 1 millisecond away from doing Nanu Nanu.
Yeah.
He's very close to doing Nanu Nanu.
Like, I think because when we get to Good Morning Vietnam on, I think the key difference we're going to note is things that are created for Robin.
Yes.
Versus things that he is just being slotted into.
Yes. Yes. 1,000%.
And this is just something, because like Mathal, who's very funny, and I think has some good bits in this movie, is a very slow comic. Like that's it. He's very dry. That's the joke. He looks like a melted frowny face.
You know what it would be like in today's terms? Like I just think the guy you like, you listen to him a lot. He talks like
Joe Pera.
It's like put Joe Pera with like Robin Williams. Like,
no, can I tell you a perfect one-for-one comparison to this, but this movie understands how to match both their energies? Men in Black.
Will Smith.
Will Smith is a like live wire, and Tommy Lee Jones looks like a melted frowny face.
Hmm.
It is the exact same type of pairing energy as this movie.
It's not, that's not like comedy. That's like acting duos.
But that's a comedy movie.
It is. It is. But I'm just trying to think of what stand-ups you've seen and like.
But I just think like, because Will Smith starts in comedy shows and as a musician. Okay. And Tommy Lee Jones is like a veteran actor who uses like deadpan as his comedy style.
Yeah.
And so I think like it's the same energy. It's the same pairing, except that movie understands how to match their enemies and energies and use them in opposition in a smart way. Whereas this movie doesn't understand like. It just, every time they're in a scene together, like, why are these guys hanging out? Like, it seems like the second Donald, like, you know, or, what, Sonny, is that his name?
Robin? Sonny.
The second Sonny is able to cut Donald loose, like, you think he'd just do it.
Yeah.
Like, you don't understand why he's so, like, invested in this guy.
Yeah.
Besides the fact that, like, he has to make sure that he shuts up for the killer. But all that aside, like, you never buy, like, this friendship between them.
No, you don't.
They don't really have like a embedded chemistry.
And you kind of lose track of what Robin's doing in the movie because of the speed of it. It's like
that's the thing. I was like, I kept being like, I swear, am I like
falling asleep and waking up?
No, am I like accidentally fast forwarding?
Mm-hmm.
Because he is moving so quickly.
Yeah.
And that's great because that's his style.
Yeah.
But the like any other movie I've seen with Robin, when he's moving that fast, I don't like.
You don't feel the speed.
I don't feel the speed.
Yes.
In this, I'm just like, buddy, slow down.
Well,
like,
I would say the
movie's so sluggish.
The counteract to that is, as we just said, The Birdcage.
Yeah.
It's like you have Nathan Lane and Robin Williams and like their timings together. Robin, you don't notice how fast Robin is moving in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
He is moving so wickedly fast, but it feels so organic in the situation of the plot. And
because the movie's matching his speed,
it's matching his speed.
And it's teaching you how to.
Yes, yes.
A movie has to teach you how to watch it.
And then you have Aladdin, which is a movie built for that. Like it literally catered to the role of Robin.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, this character, like, do what you want with this character. We built it for you.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, I'm gonna have a hard time talking about the plot of the movie, to be quite honest.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's because it's very simple. That's the thing. It's like,
it's very simple.
The plot of this, like, here, I can probably tell you the plot of this movie in 15 seconds.
And go.
Two guys get fired. They go to a diner. The diner gets held up. They're the only people who see the guy's face. They have to placate the criminal. They get him arrested. He goes out on bail. Robin Williams joins a like firm to learn how to fire an assault weapon. The guy comes there. They all escape. They're all friends. Like, I kind of skipped some details there.
It skipped some details.
I think I, like...
But that was still pretty good.
No, because it is, like, to just jump right into it, it's like, at the beginning of the movie, I'm like, oh, is this thing going to cook? Like, because it starts a little funny.
It does start a little funny.
Yeah. What really got me, I liked Rob, because it's Robin, and he's, like, he's a upper management executive in some company. Unclear.
Unclear. I thought it was a law firm.
Law firm of some sort.
Yeah.
He walks into a boardroom with a briefcase, and there's a parrot on a table, and the parrot tells him he's fired because the boss couldn't be bothered to be there. So he just repeated the word sentence to a parrot and sent the parrot there.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's a funny idea.
Yeah.
Very, very May-ish. And then, you know, he goes up to the front desk, and he's like, the parrot fired me. And the receptionist's like, yeah, here's your last paycheck. And he's like, I've been here for so long. She pulls a gun on him. And he's like, all right.
And that's where you think, is this movie going to cook?
Yeah, is this movie funny?
Is this movie actually
because
funny?
Then he goes to the diner to be sad. It cuts to Mathau, who's at a gas station. No, Robin goes to a gas station.
Yes.
And he's so sad, he doesn't even notice that when he puts the gas pump in, it doesn't go in the tank. He just like kind of sticks it through a hole in the car, so it's pouring on the ground beneath him.
Mm-hmm.
Mathau is inside the gas station on the phone, and they're telling him that they're going to shut his gas station down. And he's like, "You can't do this to me. I'm a veteran. I fought in the war." And they go, "What war?" And he says, "What war? The big one.
The big
Korea."
One.
And then there's just a moment of silence. He goes, "Well, it was big to me." He hangs up the phone. It's so funny.
It's pretty good.
It's a great bit of comedic time where he's like, yeah, "It was big to me," because they're clearly like, Korea, that wasn't that big of a war.
Yeah.
And he hangs up, and then he lights a cigarette, and he steps outside. Simultaneously, Robin pulls away with like leaving a trail of gas on the ground beneath him. Mathau throws a cigarette on the ground. And as Robin's driving away, he's like, just seems really depressed. And then just behind him through the rear view window, you're just watching Robin drive. Just a massive explosion engulfs the entire gas station.
Oh my God.
And just when you think it's done, a second explosion goes off. It's very funny. I mean, you're like, did Matho just die?
He did not.
He was totally fine.
He was all good.
But his gas station is gone.
Yes.
Because it goes to his daughter. He's like, he doesn't even tell her the gas station blew up. He just is like, I'm fired.
And now he's on the unemployment line.
Yeah.
And
they both go to the unemployment
line.
Once again, Robin has like a gun pulled on, pepper spray is pulled on him.
Yeah. It's like, careful, I'm allergic to mace.
Yeah. And the two of them just don't understand how to be like unemployed.
Funny.
It's like a funny concept of like two well-to-do white guys in New York don't understand how to be unemployed.
Mm-hmm.
They don't understand the rhythms. They claim to know everything, but they know nothing.
Yeah.
But then, you know, they both fail at the unemployment line. They go to a diner. They sit next to each other. And then a masked man comes in with a weapon. Starts holding everyone up. Mm-hmm. He takes the money out of the register. There's not that much in there. And then he asks everyone, take all your clothes off. Matthew refuses to take his pants off because he's not wearing underwear.
Right.
He's like, I will not let you see that.
Robin.
Robin's like, just I'll take my pants off. He takes his pants off and he's like, let him do it. And then like a little fight breaks out. They rip the mask off the guy. They both see his face. It's a country singer, Jack Reed, playing Jack Locke, the criminal. And then the criminal runs away.
Yeah, the criminal runs away. And you said Robin got shot. Robin got shot in the shoulder. So he goes to the hospital. And then for some reason, Walter Matthau is like with
goes
him.
To the hospital.
He goes
him?
To the hospital with him.
Yeah.
For some reason.
For reasons.
This is where the movie falls apart.
Yes. And I'm like, why didn't he go? I mean, I get that he felt bad, but his wife's here now.
Yeah. There's no reason.
Yeah, there's no reason for him to be here anymore.
Well, and so,
like, if someone got shot next to me, I would go with them to the hospital until their family showed up.
Yeah.
And then I would presumably, I would leave at that
point. Be like, all right, great. Thanks for, we did what
we
did.
Let me know if you need anything.
And so then, but they hang out at the hospital together for a long time. And there's a news segment. And on the news segment, there's a guy who's like giving his opinion. He's like, yeah, it's great that these guys like stopped a robbery, but these guys are hot shots.
Yeah.
Hooligans. We should let the police handle it.
Yeah.
These guys are dumb. And Robin is like, I'll show you a hot shot. And then he goes, the TV.
Yeah. He moons Fun the fact, TV.
He actually mooned the TV.
Yeah.
And he's naked underneath the roof.
We saw it.
And you know what I wonder? It's like, I bet you, like, Michael Ritchie's like, Robin, you can wear underwear under your robe. It's like, no, I have to be full Monty.
Full Monty. because, like, I'm willing to suspend my disbelief about what I was just saying. Like, I'm fine if Matthew has to stay there for the plot to go through.
Mm-hmm.
But the movie never sells me on, like, why they become friends or hang out.
Yeah.
Besides the fact they're both unemployed.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know.
Stop.
Yeah. Anyway. So,
anyway.
Donald, he goes on the TV in retort.
Yes. And he gives away Sonny's name.
Yes. Which lets Jack, the criminal, go to Sonny's house and essentially tell him he's going to shoot him in the head.
And this is a great bit.
Yeah,
sequence.
This is good.
When Jerry Reed and Walter Matthau are just having like a cordial conversation.
Yeah, they're having a very cordial conversation. And Matthau keeps thinking that Jack is not going to shoot him anymore. But then he's like, okay, now's the time. And he's like, what, you're still going to shoot me? He's like, yeah, I came here to kill you. Just because we're having a good time doesn't mean I'm not going to do it.
Right.
It's funny.
It is funny.
And Matthau is really selling the like, well, he's like completely shocked every time.
Every time.
He, for three separate instances, buys, oh, this guy's not going to shoot me anymore. And then his surprise when the guy's like, I'm still going to shoot you. He's like, what? It's really funny.
It is really funny.
Matthew has great timing, always.
And then Robin shows up.
Yeah, Robin shows up.
Middle of the night.
Because he got an angry phone call from Matthew.
Yeah, okay.
He had left an angry voicemail, essentially.
Gotcha.
And Matthew's daughter comes up and is like, Dad. And then she's held hostage. And then Robin like hides behind the wall with like a club of some sort, something he finds on a table.
Yeah.
And then he hits the criminal in the back of the head and he falls down.
Knocks him out. And then they take his gun.
Yeah,
Walter Matthau has a gun.
Yes.
And then they lead him at gunpoint.
To the police station. Important detail is that earlier in this, Jack the Criminal had Jack Locke had said that I'm the guy who disappeared Jimmy Hoffa.
Yes.
And this is like a big deal. Like, really?
Whoa.
That's why I'm sure what button am I wearing right now?
Jeff is currently wearing a button that has the face of Jimmy Hoffa on it. And it's the text is, I'm a friend of Jimmy Hoffa. Yeah.
It's actually Al Pacino's Jimmy Hoffa. It's the Irishman one. But this is the actual button just with Al Pacino in the middle instead of real Jimmy Hoffa.
Ah, okay.
But it's I'm wearing an I'm a friend of Jimmy Hoffa button that I got recently in support of The Irishman, a movie I like a lot.
Good.
Good and true.
Good and true.
Good and true. So they have, they bring the criminal to the police station, Jack. They're like, there's so many people at the police station, so they're struggling to get attention. Finally, they get a detective. I apologize. this movie's putting me to sleep.
This movie is...
Yeah. No, I just haven't gotten a lot of sleep recently. Eventually, like, they get a detective's attention.
Yeah.
And he's like, what's going on? And Robin, like, shows the gun. It's like, he threatened, and, like, every cop
pulls a gun.
Pulls their gun out and points it at Robin. And they're like, I'm not the criminal. He's the criminal.
Yeah.
And there's like, just tell us what he did. And Matthew's like, well, he... And the guy looks at him. Because he's about to say killed Jimmy Hoffa. He's like, robbed a diner. And it cuts to the two of them walking out. Robin's like, why didn't you tell him about Hoffa? And Matthew's like, well, that one, you know, in 30 years then, when he gets out of prison, he'll go for a computer and that implicated him and Hoffa instead of us.
Cool.
Funny.
Funny.
And then they go about their lives. Donald becomes paranoid. And
yes.
Convinced that, you know, Jack's going to come for him. So he...
Because Jack doesn't go to prison.
Yeah. He gets out on bail.
Out on bail very shortly.
But before that, the two of them are driving and Don's just talking about how much he liked holding a gun and the power he felt.
Yeah.
They pass a gun store and the two of them go in
to
the gun store.
Robin.
So that Robin can like buy, look at the guns.
Robin gets an assault rifle.
Yes. He buys an assault rifle from John Goodman.
Oh my God, I don't miss that was John Goodman.
It's like John Goodman has like two lines.
Oh my God.
It's what? Very young John Goodman.
Why did I miss that?
He's like, yeah, you can buy this 75 assault rifle. But it is a funny bit where like he is, he like goes to the counter with a little person as well. And they're selling the little person like the huge Magnum and they're trying to sell Robin like the little pea shooter.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's funny, I guess.
Meanwhile,
Matthau is having a conversation with a woman who's a pacifist. I don't know why she's in the gun store.
I checked out a lot on this scene.
But Robin, like, gets a brochure for a, like, end of society preparedness camp in New Hampshire, which plays important in later. Because Robin goes home, he's, like, about to have sex with his girlfriend, who lays down on the couch, and she's like, what's this underneath me? And he's like, I'm just excited.
And it's the assault rifle.
And she's like, no, it's under the couch. And she reels up and there's just an assault weapon down there.
Mm-hmm.
So they break up because she doesn't want to stay with a lunatic while he enrolls in a survival camp.
He enrolls in a survival camp that's also like a private military.
Yes.
Meanwhile,
led by a guy named Wes.
Meanwhile, Jack, Jerry Reed, is...
gets out of jail.
What?
He gets out of jail
and he goes home and he's like packing up to go hunt down the guys.
Yes.
And his wife is like, are you cheating on me? He's like, no.
This is a good bit.
I'm a murderer, honey. Yeah.
He's like, I'm not at that committing adultery. I'm out there committing murder. And she says, oh, thank God.
Thank God.
I also do want to say that the bit where Robin is like looking at all the guns and he's like, because he shows his girlfriend all the other weapons that he bought, because he bought several other like pistols and knives and whatnot, it gives big opening of Aladdin energy where like they just kind of let Robin go to town on a table of trinkets.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that story when we get to Aladdin, but where like they just brought him they gave him a table of trinkets and a recording, but it's just a riff for like 15 minutes. Do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Gives some of that energy where he's just like coming up with all these crazy names for these knives and pistols Chinese throwing stars that he has purchased. But it's fun to see like the beginning of that and think they're going to perfect that bit.
Yeah.
Down the line.
They're going to get better.
Yeah.
Which is the common thread of like Robin's career.
They're going to nail this.
They're going to nail this. So Jack goes hunting.
Yes.
For the guys.
He goes to Sonny's house.
He goes.
Or gets in Sonny. Sonny's now a cab driver.
Mm-hmm.
He gets in Sonny's cab and holds him at gunpoint and says, "I'm going to shoot you." And Sonny says, "No, Donald's the guy you want. I'll get him for you."
Yeah.
And he's like, "All right, well, call me within the next day with where I can find Donald."
And he finds Donald very quickly.
Yeah. And he's like, he's at a survivalist camp, and he goes up to the survivalist camp with his daughter for some reason.
Yeah.
I wrote in my notes at this point, this is the last note that I wrote, I said, if this was on cable, I'd probably watch it. But like, if I just was scrolling and this popped up, I'd probably watch it.
Not from a random point. Not for me.
Yeah.
Not for me. This is
very good.
I played like a 4-hour board game last night.
Yeah.
And this is after I watched World According to Garp. And then when I had the board game put away, by that time it was like 10:30. I'm like, fuck, I gotta watch another Robin Williams movie. So at 10:45, I put on The Survivors.
Yeah. We were sleepy.
I was a little sleepy, I'm not gonna lie. So there's a lot of bits and details. I'm like, what happened? What the fuck? So like, all I remember is that he's at the private survivalist military camp. Robin, I love the bit in The Survivors where it describes... Donald, however, is so confident of his ability to face danger as he taunts Jack into coming up to the camp for a final showdown. Donald has become a killing machine due to Wes's teaching. And so then Jack goes up to the survivalist camp, and him and Donald have like a gun fight.
Yeah, they have a gun battle. It winds up with both of them inside of the cabin together.
Yes.
With the entire survivalist troop surrounding them.
Yes.
Mathau and his daughter are also in there. His daughter's still here for some reason.
Because the survivalist camp wants to kill Jack, but the problem is Jack is in the side of this cabin with Donald and...
Sonny. And Candace.
And Sonny's daughter, Candace, yeah.
Who's still here. I want to keep emphasizing, the daughter's here for some reason.
The daughter's here for some reason. And so I think it was Walter Mathau who said like... He said the funny quote of just like... He says... Fuck me. God damn it. He says some line. It's like,
fuck.
I'm looking it up here. The soldier above all other people prays for peace, for he must suffer and bear the deepest wounds and scars of war. And then the guy, the Wes, is like, that's horse shit. And they all start firing onto the barn. How do they resolve this? They just escape?
Donald pretends to have...
Jack at gunpoint?
Yeah, Jack at gunpoint. And he's like, I'm not leaving. And Wes lets Mathau leave, but then they all get in his car and they drive away.
And Jerry Reed
is like now okay with
them.
It's like a very lazy, like sluggish.
And it all worked out.
It all just works out.
And that's the movie. That is The Survivors.
Yeah, Wes is exposed as a huckster who's just like ripping all these guys off for a survivalist camp. He has like a bunch of businesses in like Pittsburgh and Detroit and shit.
So cool.
Yeah. And suddenly at the end, Donald and Sonny are friends. And they walk away together, and like this Randy Newman song goes, "Every Man's a King," starts playing. And every man's a king. You got a friend in me. You got it. Friend of me.
So this movie comes out.
Randy Newman do a song for this
movie? In 1983, in June.
Yes, June 22nd.
And so this movie had a $12 million budget. And I'm reading, at least on IMDb and a few other sources, that it grossed $14 million. So barely just made its budget back. Still probably lost maybe a little bit of money when you account for all the other stuff that you got to do. It also does horribly with critics.
Yeah, nobody likes this.
Roger Ebert says it's an aimless, self-indulgent, confusing comedy that never comes to grips with its material and allows Robin Williams to run wild, destroying any marginal credibility the story might have had. It's a mess. So Roger Ebert, not a fan of the movie.
This is true.
He says Walter Mathau manfully acts as if he's in a plausible movie. Good shit.
That's good.
So, yeah, it gets critically panned, doesn't do well in the box office. And this movie really doesn't do anything for Robin in his career. Like, I think it's like this and another movie he does, I think in 86, Club Paradise. It's like pretty much he's now kind of in this sort of in-between period where he keeps trying out different movies. And like after this, he's going to do Moscow the Hudson, Best of Time, Club Paradise, Seize the Day. Pretty much this stretch that he's on before Good Morning Vietnam, not going to be a great time.
Yeah, it's like it's early comedy. Some of them will be funny, some won't.
Yeah, and like this is different to say like he's not in like
a rut.
John Travolta 80s. He's not making like fucking, I don't know, Two of a Kind. I mean, I would say a lot of these movies that Robin is going to be making before Good Morning Vietnam is like kind of like those John Travolta 80s comedies that he tried to do.
What was that one where he and Two of a Kind. Alex Winter go to the Soviet Union? You remember that movie?
Remember Boris that and Natasha. No, not Boris and Natasha.
The Experts.
The Experts, the worst fucking movie in the world. Yeah,
no, Experts was fine.
It's going to be like on that level of like Two of a Kind, The Experts, Eyes of an Angel, but like comedy.
Look Who's Talking.
Like Robin Williams is in that kind of zone right now. And like, you know, like it could be worse. Could be in a lot worse movies.
Yes, he could be. This is true.
And we'll get to a period where he's in some pretty bad shit.
But that's we don't got to worry about that. We got a year before we have to worry about covering
The Night Listener,
A Merry Friggin' Christmas. We got a while before we got to worry about
House
that
of D. D. The Final Cut, The Ruddles 2, Can't Buy Me Lunch.
I think it's The Ruddles 2.
The Ruddles 2?
Yeah, I think it's The Ruddles.
Death to Smoochie.
I gotta watch The Ruddles 1 for that.
You know what's funny, though?
Would it be funnier if we didn't watch The Ruddles 1?
Here's the thing, though, that like I got to say right now about Robin Williams. Is even these like really like movies that look like they're bad, we have guessed for. You know what that means? That means people have watched these movies and like have enough like passion to talk about them.
Yes. We got someone who wanted to come in for SpongeBob SquarePants, Truth or Square.
Like, even in Robin Williams' like bad periods, people still find love in him.
Yes.
But anyway, he's not getting any love now. He's still kind of rutting it.
Yeah, he's rooting it in the Ruddles. No,
I do also want to include in like a personal life aspect of it. Like Robin is, I think, trying to get sober from cocaine and alcohol. Yeah. I don't know how successful he is at it just yet.
Well, judging by his speed in this movie, I'd say not very much.
But this is shortly after John Belushi dies.
Yes.
John Belushi died in 82. 82, March 5th. And it's widely known, it's not really a secret, very widely known that like the night John Belushi died, he was out partying with Robin Williams.
Yeah.
So that was kind of like a big wake up call for the comedy community.
Mm-hmm.
Of like, oh shit, maybe I shouldn't be doing like buckets of coke every night.
Yes.
And he just had his first kid, Zach Williams, with Valerie. And I want to say like Robin and Valerie are still together. I'm just trying to like something I'm trying to do is like keep a rough timeline of like Robin's personal life with what's going on. I think they divorced in 88. So they're still together, but they're going through some tough times. Well, I mean, Robin is on coke, sleeping with a lot of women. That's just kind of the character that he is. Like, one of my thesis for this podcast was like, what would you say about a person who's no longer with us whose kids might listen to our podcast?
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody would argue. It's like, yeah, Robin was a hound dog in the 80s.
Yeah.
So, all right. You have any final thoughts on the survivors?
It's a little boring.
We survived this episode.
I mean, it's if it was on cable and there was nothing better to watch, I would probably put it on and do something else while it's playing. That's like the energy I'd have for this movie. Every now and again, I'd look up and like chuckle at something that happened. Or like just look at Mathow's face, which is just a funny thing to look at by itself.
I was very sleepy watching this movie. This movie did not do itself any favors.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Matthau is that you just look at him and it's like a little funny. Because what he looks like.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, I see what you were doing there.
Anyway.
And so, yeah, I don't really have any other thoughts either. I want to thank everybody for listening to the Survivors 1983.
Tune in next week for episode on.
Next week. Tune in next week. Tune in next week for Moscow on the Hudson.
I just read what Moscow on the Hudson is about. I'm very excited for this movie.
It is a movie that I think, like, it's 73% of Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
Bad. Yeah, join us next week for 1984, directed by Paul Mazursky.
Yes.
And Moscow on the Hudson. That's going to be a doozy.
Moscow on the Hudson.
Yeah. Still very exciting, talking about all Robin's early stuff. If you liked this episode, please don't forget to rate, review, like, and subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on. We're on many. Remember, you can comment on Spotify. You can comment on Spotify. We appreciate those comments. Tell us how wrong we are about our thoughts and views on Robin Williams.
Yes.
Or any other episode that we've done in previous seasons. Give us your thoughts. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, so many other platforms. You can just Google us and you'll find us.
Yeah,
you can subscribe and follow us on our social media platforms. You can find us on Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky. Are we anywhere else besides those three?
Nope.
Okay, cool.
That's it.
Should we start TikTok?
No, I'm not doing a TikTok. If someone else wants to do TikTok, they can do TikTok. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing TikTok. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so... thank you all so much for listening. We'll see you next week for Moscow. Special thanks to Rebecca Johnson for the graphic design and Michael Van Boden Smith for the theme music. It's now taking you out. Thank you so much, Jeff, my co-host. See you guys next week for the Survivors.
Bye.